What's going on, everybody? It's your boy Law from the Art of Storytelling, Tales by Law. Welcome to a brand new series that I'm doing.
Sure.
Yeah. To be determined, you'll see the description for the title of the show when you click on the show. But with me today, and for now and always for this series, is...
Hey everybody, what's going on? It's Demetrius Lane here again.
What's up?
What's up? What's up? Thank you for having me.
Thank you for doing this. Like, I've kind of had it in the back of my head to do like a series like this with you for a while now. Like, since Geek Ronin, you came on, and when you came on for with your story, which, again, thank you so much. Lots of positive feedback on that episode, on those episodes, rather.
Very good.
Did you have fun? Do you like podcasting? Are you getting a little podcast bug now?
Yeah, I've got a little bit of a podcast bug. I think that it's a lot of fun. It makes you really, really learn new things, listen to. It's really a good experience. I really enjoy it.
Good.
So thank you.
Good. I'm glad. All right. So this introductory episode is to kind of give you guys an overview of what the series is about. I thought it would be interesting for us to take our favorite narrative or not so favorite narrative pieces, whether they be from books, from games, from movies, comics, pop culture, and we kind of see what goes into a story, what makes a good story, what makes a bad story, and kind of, you know, pick brains about it. This first introductory episode essentially is what makes a good story, or what makes a story worth telling. I think, especially now, you know, season eight of Game of Thrones just dropped its series finale, season finale, and it's left people so undecided, I guess. There's so many people on the fence of things, and it almost puts people up in arms when things don't go their way in a lot of these like pieces. So what happens is everyone thinks they're a better writer than the writers and the showrunners, and I get it, and I've been there, but I also understand that I have to separate myself from those kind of projects.
I mean, I think that we all do it to a certain extent, where we have preferences as to how we would have ended the story versus how it was actually like published and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I do it all the time, specifically for like The Walking Dead. If I had to rewrite The Walking Dead, oh my god, things would change so much. But
yeah. All right, so think of like your favorite like early stories, like growing up. What were your favorite like stories growing up as a kid?
Some of my really favorite early stories probably were I'd have to think about it. I can't remember a lot of the books that I read when I was a kid, but
or even like so like I'll go like growing up, I was and am still a huge Batman fan, but like I grew up really loving like Robin Hood, Peter Pan, King Arthur and Knights of the Round Table. Like those are my early epic stories, you know, of heroes and villains and all this other stuff. And then as I got older, kind of like dove into Batman and you know, X-Men stories. But the reason why I ask is like those early stories, like how did you get pulled, like what pulled you into like an early story? Do you remember? Was it like you know, your favorite uncle sat you down and like had that voice, as most uncles do, or was it like the story itself, like you just like gravitated towards something?
I always did like to read, and what drew me into stories was a couple of things. Most importantly, it was kind of its ability to create visuals in my head. Like when I read things, I like to be able to see what's going on. So books that have some sense of description in them, but you know, when they discuss like the green grass or the weather, or like the things that are like tangible within mm-hmm. the environment, like those are always really, really interesting stories.
When you read, are you a super visual person? Like you can almost For me personally, I'm almost third person. Like, everything is almost first person view, but I'm third person in terms of, like, I'm not one of the characters. I'm seeing it almost like I'm seeing it above the shoulder of a character.
Yeah. I'm always, when I read stories, I'm always like the bystander watching the events of the story happen. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I enjoy when stories make me feel like I can watch this happen. I do enjoy, to answer your question, another part of the story that I really, really enjoy is when there's like conflict that actually makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of books have conflicts in them or characters who conflict with each other. And it doesn't really, really make sense. Like
something that just drives the plot?
Yeah. People have really, like, poor motivations or, like, really flat motivations, and that really bothers me. But
do you think that's because some of them are, like, early develops? Why can't I word today? they're in such early development stages that they haven't fully fleshed out some of the characters and the, you know... Well, then again, if you wrote a book, like, this book is essentially, like, it should be fleshed out, I feel like.
It can be. I think it definitely can be fleshed out. But I think that when it comes to writing a book, you have to, like, curb yourself. You get what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. as a writer and as a creator of content anyway, like, there's so much we can say or do. We have to limit it to this book. Mm. Or to this many pages or to this many chapters, so that we don't say too much and leave some room for there to be growth or a sequel or, you know, continuity in a story. But yeah, I definitely enjoy those sorts of characters in those books and things like that.
So going back to the first question, like, what makes a good story? Like, I would say for me, early on, and not every story needs a hero. Like, I've seen, I feel like there's stories where there's no clear-cut lines of heroes and villains. Like, there's just a goal or objective kind of thing. But not necessarily like a fight against evil necessarily, but like a good, for me, like, a story worth telling is a story that either inspires you or leaves you wanting more, or leaves you or gives you the ability to kind of escape and just, you know, put yourself in a situation that you would not normally be in.
I agree. Those are really, really good stories, and the ones that stay with us long enough for us to remember them and to, like, suggest them to other people. One book that really sort of did that for me, I didn't read it as a child, I read it as an adult. It's called, I think I mentioned this in my friend Winston's podcast, the Rise of the Creatives podcast, and I said one of my favorite books to read is called They Both Die at the End, and it's a teen book by an author, his name is Adam Silvera, and it's basically so compelling to me because I think that it gets the ending out of the way. It's already in the title. Like, they both die at the end, right? So we know that this is not going to end well for the characters, but, I mean, that's fine. I'm kind of really happy about how the book portrays people who live on their last days and who make choices to become whatever they decide to become. And that's a really, really compelling story because it resonates so well. I think that a lot of people can pick it up and feel like they can make those sorts of choices or they can become those sorts of people without having the knowledge that they're going to die the same day. Like, it's inspiring. It's a good book to read.
Okay. I'm trying to think of a story like that for me where I don't know if it comes from a book more than, like, I feel like certain games play out that way where you kind of know, like, this is how it goes down. Mm-hmm. Or even, well, to some degree, like, a lot of Quentin Tarantino's movies start from the beginning is the end, and then you kind of work your way back, and they come full circle, and
it's a very circular thing.
Yeah. I feel like those are closer to it. And then even going to, like, something like Pulp Fiction, you have the obvious heroes of the story, but even the heroes aren't necessarily the good guys. They're just more morally right than the what we would portray as villains. You know what I mean?
That makes sense.
And I think too, like, for instance, like getting into character development, like I've recently, I've been rewatching certain series and shows with my friend, and she doesn't like certain characters that I introduce her to, and she's just like, she loves the character but like doesn't like them as a person. Like, it's really like, it's conflicting for her to like show empathy towards this character who is a good person but does the right, does the wrong thing for the right reasons, you know what I mean?
Right.
So for instance, I think I've talked about it with Tommy on previous episodes, Luther, previous episodes of Geek Ronin, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But Luther is a character played by Idris Elba on the BBC, is a detective who essentially, like, he's not a dirty cop. However, he's as close as you can get to being a dirty cop while keeping his hands somewhat clean.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, he's done dirty things, and he's done things that would be a very hard choice for most to make, but I think that's what makes him such a good character, is that ultimately he's doing things to some degree, yes, for his own self-interest, but it's for the greater good. You know what I mean?
I think that his self-interest is the greater good sometimes.
Right. You know what I mean? And it's, it becomes a situation where you, I fall so in love with the character, because what else would someone do put in that situation where, you know, you start to question yourself, you start to question your own, like, morality. Like, you're siding with this character doing clearly, I wouldn't say terrible, but doing wrong things, doing things not by the book and outside of the law to justify things that can get the results that he desires and wants inside the law.
That makes sense.
You know, and as a viewer, you kind of watch it and you kind of just, you're rooting for him, and then you're like, but isn't he somewhat like a bad guy? Or, you know, and
there's
you,
a
you
name start for to that kind of character. I think it's kind of, is it the anti-hero?
Yeah, I mean, he is, I don't know if he would be anti-hero. The only reason why I don't classify him as an anti-hero is because I see anti-hero as someone who picks and chooses when to be the hero.
Okay, let's discuss that for a second.
Okay.
Let's suggest that.
So someone like a Red Hood, a Deadpool, they have, they can be good if they chose to be, but most of the time they operate on their own agenda and do things of their own accord.
Yeah. I think sometimes what makes an anti-hero, by comparison, an anti-hero is their methods, not necessarily their, like, goals and things. So I always like to think of someone like Vegeta as an anti-hero, right?
You know what's bad is, I think that's a testament to our friendship, but
right.
I had that in the back of my head. Like,
I love how complex, I think that he's in this particular realm of storytelling in this series of Dragon Ball's, you know, universe. I think that Vegeta is one of the more compelling characters because he wants things that makes sense, for the most part, and he's not just a bad person to be a bad person.
Mm. He's always worked to some sort of greater goal, whether selfish or not.
Well, also, I think that his goals are, they're only intrinsically bad because most people don't want them. I think that he has goals that no one else wants to support.
Does it become then one of those things where, like, what you view as right or morally good may not be the same? Like, you're always going to be the villain in someone else's story.
I believe that. I learned a lesson in class, in an English class, and it says, well, it's not English so much as it is philosophy. I think that morality is based on the society that you live in. So let's say, for example, in our society, right? The society that we live in, I guess, in a micro kind of way, let's say our society as in New York, right? In New York, most people don't believe in, let's say, the death penalty, right?
Okay.
But in other societies in the same country, maybe even like in Texas, let's say somewhere out west, out, you know, south or wherever, the death penalty is actually like a socially acceptable thing.
Right.
Now, if we were in the court of law where one person believes that the death penalty is appropriate and another person believes that it's not, those are two societies coming head to head with their beliefs as to what's right. And no one's necessarily wrong. It just happens all the time. And I think that characters are developed and put together in ways where, in the case of Dragon Ball, you have these characters who are from a different planet, who are literally from a different time and place, who believe that these things are right and that they're just.
Also from different like social statuses.
Yeah, different social classes, different, all of that. You know, they have different ideologies about what's good, what's bad, what's right, what's wrong. And then they're put in these situations where they have to interact.
I also feel like, to some degree, in Vegeta's case, he started off as a very black and white character in terms of, like, his goals, desires, wants, needs, all that good fun stuff. He was very black and white to where, you know, this is this, this is that, this is this, this is that. And as the show progressed, and he was more, he became closer to the Z Fighters and the Earth Fighters. He became that gray where, like, now he's understanding there's more to this than just this or that.
Well, he's also not fighting for the interest of Planet Vegeta anymore.
True.
Because there is none. So his goals changed because he comes from a place in the beginning where he thought that his homeworld still existed.
True.
So he's fighting for the interest of Planet Vegeta, which now he knows it doesn't exist. So he's like, okay, on my planet and how I was raised and who I am, this would be right if we were living in my culture and society. But here, I guess, since I'm living here and I have to interact with you people, which he says a few times, and in so many words, he's like, I guess this makes sense for you guys. So right. I'll do it because, well, I don't want to, I'm not going against that. So obviously his morals get put into question when he fights someone like Frieza, because Frieza obviously doesn't care about anyone else's social status, social anything, except his own. He doesn't care about anyone's home planets, their rules, their anything, the development, nothing. So now he has to be like, okay, well, it's Planet Vegeta versus Planet Earth versus Namek. I mean, well, versus Frieza. On the website
dragonplanet.fandom.com, they say, Planet Vegeta, formerly known as Planet Plant, is the home planet of the Saiyan race, as well as the Tuffles and Plants. It is ruled by King Vegeta. However, the planet itself is an outpost of the Planet Trade Organization. To read more, look for the link in your Google Home app.
Thanks, Google.
Thank you.
No one was talking to you. Sure.
You just wanted to be on the podcast, didn't you?
Oh, that's cute. That's nice. Moving on.
Moving forward. Yeah, so he has to align his interests, not necessarily with Earth's interests, but particularly and almost specifically whatever it takes to oppose Frieza. And that sort of begins his character arc where he has to change who he is because, you know, he has to join forces with people he doesn't really necessarily agree with or think like to fight a common enemy. And you'll see that a lot in stories where, like, anti-heroes aren't necessarily bad people. They just come from a different place in the way of what they want or how they think or how they do things, and they have to, like, make that work with someone else who doesn't agree with it to fight a common enemy. And I enjoy that about anti-heroes.
We're definitely going to get more into that as the show, as the series progresses.
Yeah.
I definitely want to get it. Because Dragon Ball is one of those unique mediums and stories that has really given us a template for a lot of storytelling devices, character arcs, like, entire narratives, you know what I mean? Do you think, like, so as early on the dawn of man, let's say, we've told stories on cave walls and, you know, around campfires, through books, through word of mouth, he said, she said, the whole telephone game. Now we're, you know, 2019, where stories are being told on podcasts, stories are being told on YouTube and all these different devices. Are we losing that sense of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like the core of what storytelling is?
No, I don't believe so.
Or is it being almost enhanced or enabled?
I think that storytelling is a skill, and it's not necessarily what you use or you know, the medium in which you use to tell the story. It's your skill level in being able to get all these things in a story and make it make sense and make it stick with someone. You know what I mean? And the mediums that we tell our stories across, be it the internet or podcasts or YouTube or whatever. Or
books.
Books, video games, movies, music. Those are just the mediums in which we tell our stories. And I think that if you have a skill to tell a story, you can still tell a story with any of those mediums. I always like to think of some of the storytellers that I didn't necessarily grow up listening to, but you sort of honor. So, for example, like Slick Rick, right? As a musician myself, Slick Rick tells stories, and he does it through such vivid imagery that you can kind of like see where he's going, and it makes sense. Like, I always laugh when I listen to a Slick Rick song because he just says something that makes sense for that story.
It's absolutely
just like, I can see this happening, like this is a thing.
Tidbit, saw Slick Rick perform at Purchase, I think it was back in 2007 or 2006. I think it was 2007, and such a dope show, man. Like really, really dope show. And I remember like a lot of our friends were like, guys are excited to see Slick Rick. It's like, dude, he's
the guy.
He's like one of the founding like guys of hip hop. Like, and he, again, he's such a dope storyteller that you can't help but visualize not only his music videos when he did like do a music video for his music, but just the story that he's telling. It's kind of like when you go to a library and like people or just sit on a rug for like story time, you should sit there and you're embracing the story and kind of like feel like a kid again. You're just like, man, like, you know, you can paint this whole picture because of the words that he's using.
I enjoyed those. I have used to go to Barnes and Nobles and also to the library in my neighborhood growing up and just pick up books. I would never really finish them because we never really had enough time, but just to be enthralled in a story for a few minutes because it starts off so well. It starts off saying something or grabbing your attention with some sort of imagery or something, and it just moves you along.
What's a book or anything that like pulled you in and like you almost never put down after you picked it up?
Mass Effect.
Yeah? Okay.
I'll tell you a small story about my experience with Mass Effect. Now, Mass Effect, when I bought the Xbox 360, many, many years ago when it first came out, Mass Effect was one of those games that was available very early on in the Xbox, you know, in the Xbox Korea or whatever. And it was such a big game because it was just so much visually going on.
Yeah.
I had to trade the game because I was like, I can't finish this game.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I traded it. And I traded it for Assassin's Creed and Crackdown. And I never finished either of those two, but something sometime later told me...
I never finished any of those three games.
Oh, Mass Effect is delicious.
So, yes, and I understand. Like, I've been told that, but I feel like Assassin's Creed 1 and Mass Effect 1 suffer from the same thing, where it's almost an overstimulation of too much to do with not enough clear direction to keep attention.
Well, I'll tell you this about Mass Effect and its story versus its design.
Mm-hmm.
Its design is so grandiose in scale. Like, you can really, really get
like,
lost because
like anytime you went to another planet and you were just doing, like, the side stuff.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people who gets lost and, like, completely engrosses themselves in a side quest, especially something like Skyrim.
Skyrim is notorious.
Like, I can spend days, hours on like side quests and be like, oh right, I'm still like way early on in terms of like main storyline, because right. there's so many things in the side quest, even the side quests that don't have anything to do with the main quest. Like there's side quests that like directly impact like how you talk to other characters or how you make certain interactions and decisions later on. But then there's ones that are just one-offs, and I love them so much because they took the time to really develop this whole world where I can be like, today I just want to do like a lot of magic stuff. Today I want to do a lot of stealth stuff. Today I want, like, and they really, or that's, it's one of those stealth optional kind of gameplays.
Whatever that means, because it's like playing, you know, stealth games, except not using stealth. But yeah, with Mass Effect, I think that the story is so compelling. And I think that the characters do a really, really good job of being so different that they're compelling when they interact with other people. Mm-hmm. I think, like we were discussing earlier about how it's there are different societies interacting with other societies, and you try to figure out what to do and what's right and what's wrong, what's good or what's bad, and you literally have the ability to like become a objectively good or bad person because of the choices that you feel are right or wrong. And I love that about that line of games particularly, is that you have control over your own morality, and it may make sense to you, and people may or may not agree with you. They may have falling outs with you.
One thing I appreciate about New Vegas was that just because I was playing a good person, like I was playing the hero type character, doesn't mean I'm, again, the hero in everyone else's story. So there was times where, because I made a certain decision that would maybe benefit 90% of the population, 10%, when I needed to go there, saw me and immediately shot first, asked questions later. And I was like, wait, but like, and they were I'm like, a good nah. person,
hold on.
Yeah. And there was like, yeah, right, like, good person my ass. And I was just like, okay, I'm gonna die.
Right, yeah.
You know, and then you have to have a whole nother conversation with them eventually, if and when they stop shooting, and kind of figure out, how do I get you guys to be on my side when we're on such opposite sides of the conversation?
Mm-hmm. Mass Effect 3 does a really good job with amping that sort of situation up, where the choices that you make, let's say if you decided to want to be really, really inclusive in your choices and say, hey, this group of people needs our help so they can support us.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone's going to agree with that. And like, you literally lock yourself out of some support from one group or another, depending on how you choose. Unfortunately, the game sort of ends all the same, regardless as to like what you pick or what you right. choose to do. But it's interesting to see, like, at the end of the game, who shows up. Mm-hmm. Like, who can say that they were your friend, who survives or who dies because they supported or didn't support you. Like, those types of decisions, I love to see those sorts of things play out, because you can make a ton of choices and there's fallout and benefits to every single one of them. And that makes it such a beautiful story. The characters are really, really complex sometimes. Their wants and their desires are also sometimes complex. There's one character in particular in the Mass Effect series that I love and hate all at the same time. If you ever play Mass Effect 2 and 3, the character's name is Jacob. And Jacob is compelling only because he's the most simple character there is.
How so?
Okay, so in your journey through these games, you'll find a lot of people who have issues with their homeland or their state of being. Mm-hmm. Jacob has none of those problems. He's the most normal person by far. Like, mentally, he's the most normal person, like, emotionally. Like, he's stable.
But it sounds like in this world, he would be the opposite of normal, because the normal is for everyone to have some sort of background history with their home world or the government or how they interacted with. He might be that one thing in a million.
Yeah, I mean, gameplay wise Jacob is really boring to play as, because everyone else can do so much more because they have experiences or traumas that allow them to like really right. put themselves out there like that. But Jacob is by far the most normal character, which makes him almost kind of really compelling, but really boring. Like, his side quest, his loyalty mission is, I need help finding my dad. Everyone else is like, my sister's been kidnapped, my father's the conglomerate, like, executive of right. this big... Like, it's just ridiculous how crazy these people are, and I hate using the word crazy, but Jacob is by far the most normal, and I appreciate that about him, because he's one of the only black characters that they have, and he's pretty normal. Okay. Yeah, I would recommend it, but yeah, I enjoy just a mix of different ideologies trying to, like, figure out how to move forward next. I think that that's very good storytelling when that's masterfully executed.
Alright, I'll end with this. Favorite either team that has created a story, favorite author, favorite creative franchise that offered, like, you, like, that story, like, you were just like, yo. You go for, like, early on, I feel like as kids we all grew up enjoying R.L. Stein, because that gave, like, a certain narrative that we were just like, it was our horror books that we could enjoy without being truly freaked out and have to read hundreds upon hundreds of pages, like a, you know, Stephen King book.
Right, yeah. R.L. Stein is definitely the kids' version of Stephen King.
Like, I would say early on, James Patterson was a big one for me.
Those are big books for kids.
Well, I think I started him, like, I was in eighth grade or ninth. Got onto them. And then a lot of the Percy Jackson novels, Harry Potter books. But if I had, like, a really standout, like, there's a book I read in high school. And I've read this book maybe 3 or 4 times. And if you know me, you know I do not read books more than once. And it's really bad. I kind of do it with movies as well, but not as much. But there are things that I read and never pick up again. And it's not so much that I don't want to immerse myself in that world again. But I got it. It served its purpose. There wasn't anything more that I felt like I can get out of them. And this book is a hip-hop story by Heru Pata. I want to say that's how you say his last name. I could be saying it wrong. And I've read this book maybe 3 or 4 times, and each time I've gotten something different, and I've, like, given this book, like, I bought this book and given this book away, like, to friends. Like, I've just so thoroughly enjoyed, like, symbolism in the book. It came out right around the time of the Jay-Z Nas beef, so you saw a lot of, like, parallels between them, and just general beef in hip-hop in general. Like, you can see where he took certain things, and you're starting to develop, like, so much more meaning behind a lot of this. Like, at one point, one of my teachers who recommended it, he said something about, like, the guy in red. There's always something that anytime there's a shift in the book, something would appear in red. And I said, without, like, spoiling too much of it, I was like, did he know he was gonna die? Or did he know, like, this was gonna happen?
Right, yeah.
And, you know, or was that... Or some people were like, like, I think one of my classmates or somebody brought it up, where I was like, oh, it's the devil.
Hmm.
That devil comes in red. And it's just one of those books that if you read it, you can keep reading. Like, there's so much that even in, and I credit him for his writing, that he was able to not only write a great story with, I want to say at least 4 main characters that you are driven towards and feel for, but also the differences of hip-hop writing style. Like, he wrote for 3 different artists
right.
in the book, and you're seeing, like, the differences between all of them. and at some point, like, they blur, but you'll see why. And it's a really dope story. I recommend it to anyone who even remotely is interested or has a love for hip-hop culture or just a good story. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those where I put the book down and I was just like, oh. it was honestly one of my first recommended readings from school that I read ahead. You know what I mean? Like, that tells...
Smart kid.
You know?
This one here.
I try.
I think that one of my favorite stories comes in the form of a couple of Teen Titans episodes.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, over the course of Teen Titans, you see a lot of things happen with a lot of the characters where they grow and they change and they want things. I think that Robin's betrayal of the Teen Titans was always the most interesting thing to me because he did it for intel. I think that Robin is such a hardcore leader. And
it shows how much, even though he doesn't want to be Batman, he is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the lengths he's willing to go through.
And that puts a lot of characters that we know and love and trust into questions because... and it happens over and over again. Like, now that I'm thinking about it, that sort of betrayal in certain types of media really determine how well they do, I think, for me. You'll see it in the Teen Titans series where Robin betrays the Teen Titans or... to harp on that one in particular, Robin basically betrays the Teen Titans to prevent something bad from happening to the whole team.
Right.
And he also does it for intel, and begrudgingly, he's super effective at it.
Greater good.
Yeah, right. It's the whole greater good thing. Like, he doesn't want Slade to kill the entire team, so he's like, okay, fine, I'll be your apprentice. And I'll fight against my friends and family so that you don't hurt them. I'd rather hurt them before you do.
Right.
Type of thing. And I think that that's a brilliant thing for Robin to do, and it shows his heroic side a lot more than fighting villains and fighting crime when he has to fight against his own friends and family to prevent them from experiencing what would be an even worse fate. And I enjoyed how it was illustrated, how he was really, really good at exploiting all of their weaknesses because he's a strategic person. Like, he's a strategist. He knows everything about the team, and he used that knowledge to exploit them. He's the only one without superpowers, and he used his knowledge to exploit super beings.
Mm-hmm.
I love that arc, and I think that it was really, really well done. So that story always comes to mind when I think of good stories.
All right, so I'm gonna wrap here. First episode in the bag. Name to be determined. You'll see it when we see it. when we figure that out. How can we find you on the social media?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Demetrius Lane. It's spelled DemetriusLane.
Links also in the description.
Yes, the link is in the description. You can pick up my new EP. It's called Unspoken, and it is available everywhere on Spotify, Tidal, iTunes, Apple Music, Amazon, Google, Napster, Deezer, anywhere that you can think of.
He said Napster. Wow.
That's, you know, it's there.
All right. That's it. Thank you guys so much for another series. I know I'm always doing the most, but this should be fun. I'm really looking forward to it. I think next time I want to like pit two similar stories, but see what went wrong and what went right for these stories. So we'll hype it up. We'll let you guys know. Hopefully make it every week, every 2 week series. We won't have too much gap in between. We'll try not to. All right. Love you guys. Thank you for the love and support. Appreciate you all. Follow your path.
Peace.